I'm Smith Called Keith, and you're listening to Fuel, where sales and marketing never sounded so good. Visit thefuelpodcast.com for all our shows.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Heiler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Previously on Fuel.
I thought you were going to ask me what attracts me to the lorry driver industry then. oh my gosh, I did not hear about this. That's amazing. We were Richmond Towers.
That's correct.
And we changed the all-important Richmond and Towers because people assumed we were in a tower block in Richmond, which we haven't been. It's actually... Well, I was actually going to say, you just said the out of work bit. Right. I was a bit like, what? Business development people don't have out of work lives.
We never switch off.
Are you mad?
This is Fuel.
Fuel for thought.
Fuel injected.
Fuel for your business.
Get fuel.
And I think what's been amazing through the COVID period is that we've really built this trust with the people that we work with. You know, you need to see the people. They need to be in the office. They need to be seen to be working. You know, if you actually give people responsibility, and you make it quite clear on what they need to do, and you help them, and you support them, and you actually educate and continue to educate, then you will get fantastic, talented people who will actually deliver way above what you thought was possible. Guess what? Your agency will grow. You'll be more profitable. You'll be able to basically plow that profits back into rewarding them. And it's that positive cycle of success.
Hello, new business fans, and welcome to another bumper edition of the Fuel Podcast. And I'm your host, a Smith called Keith. E pluribus unum. Out of many, one. That's the motto of the United States of America, meaning that a single great entity emerged from a lot of little entities. And that's the theme of our show this week, how groupthink, collaboration and networking can help solve creative problems and level the playing field in the world of advertising. Clients are looking for joined-up specialisms, and rather than turn to the monolithic agency groups, the Pimento Network is here to answer complex creative briefs in collaborative ways. I'm interviewing Stephen Knight, the CEO of Pimento, on the show this week because we're celebrating the fact that our sponsor, business development platform The Advertist, has joined the network to help Pimento members find their next new client. The Advertist has a special offer for Pimento Network members. Just flash your badge at us for an automatic 20% discount for access to the only independent new business development platform for creative agencies. That's news, insight, research, contact data, people moves, tenders, mergers, acquisitions, and VC-funded companies to help your agency grow its new business pipeline. Just send an email to hello@theadvertist.com. That's theadvertist.com. Okay, on with the show. Put some spice in your agency life with Pimento.
Stand by in three.
In November of last year, the parent company of this podcast, The Advertist, took a major step in its business development by practicing what it preaches, and it began a comprehensive networking campaign. Before November and during the turbulent times caused by lockdowns, the biggest single source of networking opportunities, the big dog on the block, was LinkedIn. Sure, there are virtual networks to attend, and don't get me wrong, I'm not dismissing them, but time is precious and we're all back-to-back Zoom calls or hanging out on HubSpot or Teams or some other collaboration tool, so any networking we do needs to be highly relevant. Using LinkedIn can be a very hit-and-miss affair. It requires a lot of research and investigation, reaching out, cold intros and chemistry meetings. What we needed was a vertical network that was dedicated to the creative communications industry, but that worked as a true facilitator between like-minded businesses. Something like Pimento. Pimento showed up on our radar when our good friend Ian Truscott at Rockstar CMO recommended it. After a quick email introduction, I began to see the real purpose and value of this type of network. Pimento's a fully integrated marketing and communications community. There's over 5,500 different specialists in it, so it represents a massive pool of talent to attack and solve creative briefs, collaborate and cooperation. Just like the Avatis, Pimento has an altruistic cause, which is to stimulate and facilitate business between like-minded agencies and agency suppliers, so to be able to respond to briefs and projects as a collaborative venture. In this era of marketing experimentation, many agencies have found themselves presented with complex multi-headed briefs or being part of a bigger mission. So having access to a community of similar but not the same agencies helps create bonds and alliances that would otherwise be impossible to arrange. My guest this week is Stephen Knight, the founder of Pimento. Stephen is an entrepreneur who never seems to switch off. In his early career, he held senior agency and marketing leadership roles at Low Howard Spink, WCRS, Disney, and Creator. In the last 20 years, he's been the driving force behind SSE, Zipworld, Better Health Insurance Advice, Let'sGo2.com, Odyssey Airlines, and also the NED for Clean Tech Hub, Ebico. When I first spoke to Stephen late last year, it was clear that he had several interesting and enlightening views on the creative world that he inhabits. So I thought we should get him on the show and get his take on the state of the union and see if Pimento could spice up your agency life. So welcome aboard, Stephen.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Yes, and you. Thank you for coming on and putting time aside. In the middle of a storm, ladies and gentlemen, I just have to mention we're recording this just as... What's the storm's name?
I'm calling it Storm Eunuch, but I don't think
it is. Oh, it's Eunice. That's right, Eunice. Isn't it? Eunice. Storm. But it's raging around him. So if we have any upsets, we can blame Eunice for it. But anyway, thanks for braving the weather. Now, as I alluded to in the intro, I mean, you've got some amazing ad agency credentials, and latterly through the work that you do at Pimento, you've got a really good overview of the state of the creative nation. And so I wanted to ask you, I mean, what is it about the creative industry that motivates you to get up every day?
For me, the most important thing, and has always been the case, is the people. Great thing about the creative industry is it has such a broad range of different talents, so many different backgrounds. It's very diverse in its nature, with lots of really bright thinkers. And when I first got into it in my advertising days, I was attracted really by, at the time, what was seen as a bit of a razzmatazz. There was a bit of Hollywood about it. The reality is it's bloody hard work. These days, I think it's a very different industry to the one I came into, but it still stimulates me today. And I still get out of bed because I enjoy meeting new talent, talking to new people. And for me, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, you know, it is a unique industry for creative types, and I think it's nice that that we kind of surround ourselves with these sort of people. But I mean, as I said, you've had a prolific career in the world of advertising, and some might say, you know, it's a sign of your sort of commitment to the industry that you've actually held down some quite senior roles in agencies. But I mean, in your travels through the industry, I mean, who's been the kind of most influential figure in your career, and why would that be?
A few. I was fortunate enough to work with Frank Lowe at Low Howard Spink, who's an incredible character, incredibly driven, very, very passionate, very much the kind of creative account person. And he had a belief system that was, you know, he was always right. The agency was always right. And in those days, the agency had that sort of pixie dust, and the relationship with client was very much, you know, clients were in awe of their agencies. That's changed somewhat since then. But Frank was absolutely laser focused on basically delivering the most creative answer he could possibly find to any client brief, and wouldn't accept mediocrity, would always insist on highest production values. I remember when I started as an account director there, and as part of my induction to working there was that he took me around their offices and he showed me how they displayed the advertising on the wall. And they had this metallic walls throughout the offices, which were painted beautifully. You didn't realize they were metallic walls, but in just and every single ad was put into a laminate. And behind it, there was little tags, which you could basically attach to these metal walls.
Right.
Anyhow, if you didn't line it up correctly and everything had to be you know, like 2 centimeters between each ad at a certain height, you'd get scolded for it. And that was the nature of the man. You know, everything had to be just right. And his expectations were very, very high. And he let you know when you're doing well, but he was more likely to let you know when you weren't doing quite so well. So he was the first. The second was Robin White, also an interesting character, a very flamboyant individual, very much a mentor to me. And again, you know, he very much was the creative account man. He had a million brilliant ideas a day. And your job was to basically, you know, make sure that you cherry pick the 2 or 3, which were actually A, relevant, and B, doable, and discard the rest in a gentle way so he felt that you were listening all the time. But he was wonderful, and he still is. I mean, he's still in the industry today, still doing his thing. But the combination of those two individuals were very much part of my founding in the business. And from those two, I put a lot of, you know, in their ideas into what I've done over the years, which is to kind of insist that people basically do their very best, help people to do their very best, and ensure that you're always delivering outstanding creative solutions to your clients.
And yeah, I was going to ask you if you sort of brought those, you know, those beliefs forward. And I think it's, you know, it's an important thing, isn't it? I mean, some of the great people I've worked with as well have, you know, I mean, there are just certain approaches and attitudes that you get that you just sort of think, right, well, you know, they just stick in your brain, and it's a wrinkle that you don't forget. And it's lovely to be surrounded by people like that. But I mean, you know, some of the chats we've been having recently with some quite sort of high profile figures in the industry have been, you know, we've been talking about socioeconomic diversity and inclusion and the challenges that are facing the kind of creative industries. You know, and one of them being that obviously that we're getting, that there's a feeling that there's a lack of kind of diverse thinking, that we've missed several, there's been some major misjudgments by the industry about it, you know, sort of missing things like Brexit or the Trump's election and stuff, and that there's been a kind of an isolationism in the industry. And but the thing that I loved about, you know, Pimento was the fact that kind of almost gets around that, because it gives you access to a huge pool of talent and, you know, a much wider brief. So there is none of that kind of cloistered thinking that goes on. I mean, do you think there is a need for more diversity in the industry? And do you think that Pimento's set to kind of help that sort of get around that?
On the diversity question, I think as an industry, we've been quite closed, and we've tended to hire out in our own likeness for decades. And the whole process by which people got into the industry traditionally was either through art college, if they're going into the creative side, if they're coming into account planning or into account handling. Very often, you know, they would be found on the milk rounds. And in those days, you know, agencies would go out and they would invest a lot of money going to all the major, you know, universities across the UK, and agencies would basically select the very best candidates, often from Oxford and Cambridge. So you've got a particular style and a particular type of person. And I don't think as an industry, until really quite recently, maybe in the last decade, there's been a recognition that in order to be able to actually serve both your customers correctly and your clients, you need more diverse thought. You need more diversity in background, more diversity in gender, you know, sexual orientation, et cetera, et cetera. That has happened, and the industry is now benefiting from that. But by no means are we the finished article. There's a lot more work to be done in that space. And what is also quite interesting now is that the power has shifted from the employer to the employee. We witnessed through both COVID and then Brexit and for other reasons that, you know, the employee is far more equipped to negotiate and far more able to get what they want when it comes to finding a job within the creative industries. And we've lost a lot of talent, you know, over the last 3 years in particular, since Brexit. You know, a lot of very talented people went back into their European homes. We lost a lot of people to South Africa, New Zealand, Australia, but all of whom were very active in the industry. So we're finding it very, very hard as an industry, whether you're working in the independent sector or working for groups, to attract and retain talent. The other major issue, which I'm sure you're fully aware of, is that margins within the industry have been squeezed over the last 15, 20 years. We've seen disintermediation, people coming into the business and basically beginning to work with procurement in particular. And clients were always dreadfully suspicious, and rightfully so, that agencies were being paid far too much money for the work they were doing. I think the pendulum has gone completely the other way now, and there's a lot of agencies that basically struggle to make a decent return, and as a result of which, they do squeeze their talent very, very hard. So if I look back to when I first joined the business and where we are now, I think comparatively speaking, I think people have probably paid 20-30% less than I was paid for the same job all those years ago. And the reason for that is there just isn't enough margin in the business. I also don't believe that they actually spend enough time educating and helping people in their careers and providing structures. And I wasn't allowed to let loose on a client for 9 months when I first joined in my days at Dorland. You know, you had to go on the graduate trainee program. You had to be fully immersed in all aspects of the creation and delivery of advertising. You spend time in media department, the planning department, the creative department, and so on. And only when they felt that you were ready to be put in front of a client would they do so. Well, these days, we just don't have that luxury. You know, people come into the business and they hit the ground running, and they're not invested in nearly enough. There just isn't the training. It's available, but I just don't think agencies have that margin to be able to invest in their talent. So, you know, you have three dynamics going at the same time. You've got not enough investment in talent. Well, the salaries themselves aren't as competitive as they were, and certainly not as competitive as the likes of what Google, the media owners will pay. So Google, TikTok, LinkedIn and others will pay proportionately more now. And the other big factor is, I don't think, and it could just be because I'm an old git, that actually the industry is as exciting as it once was. I think the nature of the roles that we expect people to perform these days are far more analytical, a lot more data-led. I think a lot of the processes and the creation of content, you don't, open on beach for a 60-second TV commercial. You just don't get those shoots anymore. You don't get that opportunity to actually invest in those craft skills. Content is created and is done at lightning speed, and it's very disposable. So the sum total of that is, I'm saying, it's a different world with different expectations. The upside is that there is a much broader range of different channels, and therefore, if you are coming into the creative industries, there are so many different avenues, so many different things you can be doing as a young person. In the old days, with the traditional agency model full service, you would work within a single agency and you would cover a broad area. These days, there are so many specialist agencies, whether you're going into influencer marketing, whether you're going into digital marketing, whether you're going into content development, whether you're going into film production, wherever it happens to be, there are great ways in which young people can get involved in this business. And the other great thing is there's a lot more entrepreneurs around who are actually wanting to set up businesses at a very young age. So lots of the members that we're now seeing implemented that are coming through are startups, and they are coming from, rather than 35, the 4-year-old startups, and these people are in their early 20s, and they've got great ideas, they've got passion, they've got energy. What they want help with is, how can I make this business happen? What do I need to do about marketing this business? How do I attract new business? How do I grow my agency? And those are different challenges, but that's where we're able to help them.
I was going to say, do you think that actually plays to that sort of plays to the business model of Pimento anyway, doesn't it? I mean, the conditions you outlined right at the very start of that were, are ideal conditions for somebody to look at the Pimento business model.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and the reason why Pimento came to fruition in the first place was, I was working for the Walt Disney Company at the time. We had dozens of fantastic agencies, and we were a very siloed organization. In every market, we were represented by 14, 15 different lines of business, from film through to theme parks, through to television, and so on. And each of the heads with each of those businesses at a local level had complete carte blanche to work with whatever agency they wanted to. The net result of which was, we had a very fragmented brand, and our brand meant different things in different markets because it had developed differently over time.
Right.
One of the things I set to do was to try and find a way in which we could actually galvanize and work more closely together without dictating to the local markets, whom they should work with. And I also, recognized that as a client at the time, that agencies inevitably, when they came to pitch their services, would always naturally pitch what they did. You know, so the ad agency would always say, you know, the solution to your problem, Mr. Client, is advertising. Well, the solution to your problem, you came from the direct marketing agency, was DM.
Sure.
So you weren't really getting any objectivity. So the Pimento model was in recognition of that. And it was to say, actually, surely there's a different approach whereby you don't own the assets, so you don't have a vested interest in whatever the solution is. It's the right solution for the client. And then you then cherry pick that talent from the resources that sit within the network. So the client gets a bespoke solution for their individual needs. And as their needs evolve, obviously you can bring in new people, but there's always that single point of contact that you would enjoy if you were working with a traditional agency model. So it's quicker and you're certainly more agile. You get more seniority on your brief, and you get to work, to your earlier point, with people from a very broad range of backgrounds with different specialist skills. And geographically, you know, we work with agencies right across the UK and then beyond that, where they've got international offices.
And I mean, you know, obviously, I mean, you just touched on it there, but I mean, you know, the circumstances surrounding the pandemic and the lockdowns and things like that, I mean, that's an extra level of, you know, of advantage that you were able to fulfill. So I think they often say great business decisions are, you know, 90% sort of luck, but I mean, circumstances have kind of, you know, very much sort of helped the Pimento business model along. And we'll come on. We'll talk a little bit more about it sort of a bit later on. But I mean, I wanted to touch on a couple of other things that you get involved in as well. I mean, the future work business that you're involved in. I think, I mean, you know, essentially this is a high level talent recruitment HR play, isn't it? And I mean, you know, we've had quite a few kind of shows previously where we've discussed why, you know, things like CMOs often get passed over for the CEO role, you know, and usually the COO or the CFO steps in. But I mean, why do you think so? I mean, firstly, you know, is that your experience? And if so, I mean, why do CMOs have trouble stepping into a CEO role?
I'm not saying they all do, because I mean, there's certainly lots of good CMOs that have made it all the way to the top in client organisations. Equally, too, if you look at the FTSE 100, you're going to find an awful lot more accountants that are running organisations than there are former CMOs. And I think part of the problem is that marketing hasn't always been particularly accountable. I think that in the past, marketing was part science, part art, and you know, clients needed, you know, to be convinced of its value. And that's always been the case. What we have seen, obviously, with the rise and development of digital in particular, is there's much more accountability. You can see, you spend pound here, you work out your ROI, it's over there. You can generally be able to actually see the various different touch points in a customer journey, which one's impacting and affecting that customer experience, which one's leading to a sale, and so on and so forth. So with the rise in accountability, I feel sure that we will, over time, see more CMOs climbing the pole up to general management and into that top position. But equally, too, I'm not completely convinced that CMOs necessarily want to be running large corporations. I mean, the benefits of being a CEO is it gives you a lot of freedom. It allows you to do a lot of different things, and it is still a great job. It's a fun industry, and you're dealing with lots of different brilliant minds all the time. If you set out to run a business, you probably wouldn't come through that route. And whilst we are seeing more diversity in boards, we've still got a long way to go.
Right.
It's really in the last 20 years that we've actually now seen the rise of having, you know, more ladies running, you know, FTSE top 100 companies. And I think, you know, that's taken ages to get to that point. And it's getting more diversity into senior positions in large organisations. Is still a challenge, and it's true both agency side as it is client side. But in short, you know, the role itself of actually being a CMO can now prepare you for general management. In the past, perhaps it was downplayed, particularly that relationship with the FD, which is always that sort of tragic push me pull me type situation. But I mean, listen, it's changing. I don't know that. I mean, what I'd love to find out, it'd be worth actually maybe doing some research around this, find out actually how many senior CMOs actually have aspirations to actually get that top position in the client organization.
And I mean, that is a kind of, I mean, you know, the idea behind it, just explain a little bit about the business model behind Future Work. I mean, what was the intention behind that?
Well, I kind of like disruptor businesses. So Pimento was a disruptor at the time. And as you say, it was ahead of its time. I also got involved with the first augmented reality business in the UK in 2009. So sometimes you can get involved in businesses before you should do, you know, and actually you end up educating the market rather than actually making any business. But in the case of Future Work, it was a recognition on our part that, to the point you made earlier on, is that the shift in power between employer and employee required that recruitment companies need to serve first and foremost candidates, and that's not always been the case. I think a lot of recruitment businesses are, you know, dealing in human resource, and by that what I mean is I think they're filling holes, taking commission, and whilst they do very nicely out of that model, their primary focus is on delivering on behalf of the client that's got the job.
Right.
Our thinking is much broader than that, and that is recognising that actually the working environment has evolved and has permanently changed. We're seeing, obviously, the hybrid working is now the norm, and we suspect that will continue to be the case. In fact, I think it's going to develop beyond that to a four-day week, which we can come back to later.
Hooray!
And candidates, they need, you know, whether you're in a job or whether you're looking for a job, they need different sorts of support. So we've created a club, which is free to anyone who wants to join, called The Few, and candidates are able to get help on all the basic stuff from, you know, how do I basically present myself? How do I pitch my services? How do I pitch on Zoom versus actually in you know, being in somebody's office? We're seeing the demise of the CV, and that people are now basically not providing that information, but linking through to LinkedIn and other services. We see increasingly younger people wanting not necessarily to become full-time employees, but wanting to work as their own independent consultant from a very early age and set themselves up in business on that basis. So the freelance market is absolutely huge now. And I think that's going to continue over time because agencies can't afford to carry the overhead. And also, frankly, younger people don't want to necessarily be tied to a single employer for a period.
No.
So we're helping them on basis, how do you set up your business? How do you basically get insurance cover? How do you make sure you don't get stung with IR35? All that sort of, you know, nitty gritty stuff is very, very important. And then, of course, for them, you know, how do you go about finding work? The world of working is changing. What do people need? What do they want? What's their expectations? What's happening in terms of how people are resourcing internationally? So, you know, one of the things we've seen through the COVID, and it was the example you made earlier on, is that in the past, where we may have considered, you know, location and geography to be an issue on a particular role within a company, that's no longer an issue. It doesn't really matter, frankly, as long as you've got the right people, whether they are based in London or they're based in Paris, whether they're based in, you know, in Geneva. You know, it's not a central issue anymore. We have one agency in our network that only insists that their teams come in or their people come in once every quarter. So four times a year they're expected to come into the office. And those days are days when they get together as an agency. They're not doing any client work, but they're basically, they're spending time together.
Bonding time,
And that's quite extreme, but it's not, I think, going to be unusual. And I think what's been amazing through the COVID period is that we've really built this trust with the people that we work with.
You
always use, you know, you need to see the people. They need to be in the office. They need to be seen to be working.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, if you actually give people responsibility and you make it quite clear on what they need to do and you help them and you support them and you actually educate and continue to educate, then you will get fantastic, talented people who will actually deliver way above what you thought was possible. Guess what? Your agency will grow. You'll be more profitable. You'll be able to basically plow that profits back into rewarding them. And it's that positive cycle of success.
Which brings me on to, I mean, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you know, you're sort of talking about how, you know, how the HR side of life plays into agency growth. But, you know, everything that you do seems to be geared, seems to sort of, as I said right at the very start, seems to touch on some key aspects of agency growth. And I mean, you know, without this sounding like an advert for all your empires and stuff like, or for your businesses, the now next why thing, which is, you know, it was another thing I read about, and it's another subject that we've been talking about on the podcast, you know, quite recently. You know, we had Robin Bond came on, and we had a guy on a couple of months ago called Brad Farris in Chicago, talking about, you know, the new business strategy, coaching, mentoring, all that sort of thing. And we were discussing pretty much the same issue, which is, you know, the growing pains that agencies have when they get to a certain point, and then, you know, the leader, the CEO, has to then step up into stop from being in the business to working on the business. In your experience there, I mean, what are the inhibitors to agency growth?
Ambition. I think, you know, some businesses are run purely as a lifestyle business, and as a result of which the leaders, founders, owners of those businesses don't have that drive. And if they don't have that drive, it's very difficult for them to be able to actually filter that and actually ensure that the people who are working with them actually, you know, have that motivation and drive. But I think increasingly what we're seeing is that agencies can become very internalized. And they, you know, they don't look beyond, used to say in the old days, their four walls. These days, of course, it isn't their four walls. It's they look beyond their screens. And the reality is that a lot of them have had to relook at their proposition, look at their services in light of the pandemic, and a lot of them have been found wanting. Very often, you know, they become generalists, and there's really no room for a generalist in this marketplace. You know, clients expect to have people who really understand that thing, are expert in that thing alone. And as much as agencies want to be able to stretch their proposition and offer other services to their clients, they tend to be let down to by their weakest point. So, you know, it's no longer good enough, I think, to be the best at what you do. You ideally want to be the only person who does what you do. And building that and articulating that proposition, being really clear about it so you can differentiate yourself, is extremely hard. I mean, it's ironic. We do this for our clients day in, day out, but agencies aren't very good at doing it for themselves. They can't be competitive. They just get so close to it. So Now Next Why was born out of that assumption that actually agencies actually need that objectivity. They need people who have been there and done it and got the T-shirt, people who have actually grown, built agencies and exited agencies. And we put together, you know, a fantastic bench of incredible, talented people who have all got, you know, they've got the T-shirt, they've done it before. And we've spent the last 4 or 5 months working with agencies on their proposition, honing it, articulating it and creating that story, working on that narrative, helping them with those proof points, and then turning that into communications that will actually help to drive new, more business for them. There's really no magic to it beyond the fact that it's very difficult to do it for yourself. And the reason why clients come to agencies is because they're too close to their business and they can't see them in the competitive context. Well, agencies are no different. And agencies aren't very good at taking advice traditionally. And they also haven't been particularly good at investing in other people to help them.
Right.
But we're finding no shortage of work. And we're getting inquiries on a daily basis for, you know, can you come and help us do this? Can you come and help us do that? The other thing, of course, is that agency models are changing. You know, the way in which you go about, particularly in the M&A space, it's interesting to see actually a lot of agency founders and owners aren't necessarily looking to have some sort of major payday and hit the beach and take the money out of their businesses. They're much more interested in legacy than they once were. They're much more concerned about culture. So the idea of actually building a business and then selling it and having somebody come in and create new culture and destroy what you've created is something that is a massive turnoff, not least of which, because if you really believe in the people you work with and you love working with them and you've worked with all those years, that's I think a massive betrayal.
Yes.
A lot of the work we're seeing in the M&A space is much more focused on the human element now. Things are changing in that respect, and I think what we will see is a lot more common ownership. You know, agencies are now much more comfortable in divesting a significant proportion of the equity in the business to the employees, and we're seeing that. We're seeing new tax models come to fruition. There's a lot of M&A activity. A lot of American companies at the moment are buying UK organisations. They still see it as a landing point for Europe, despite the fact we're no longer in Europe. And there's a lot of activity in, particularly in the digital space, in the data space, and in still in the technology space. So
yeah,
and we're great at that stuff over here. I mean, to be fair, you know, the one thing as a nation we've been brilliant at is inventing. We continue to invent and create new ways of doing things. And that's what makes it attractive, I think, for other nations that come and acquire assets.
Well, talking of which, I mean, it's interesting that that you brought up, you know, the difference between, you know, sort of generalists and specialists, and then obviously the professional services, because that's been a subject that we've been talking about on the show as well, you know, about, you know, whether or not the professional services companies are actually a threat to the ad agency world because of this kind of holistic soup to nuts kind of proposition. And I mean, do you see them as a threat?
I think they are. I think they're doing essentially what we should be doing in many areas too. And I think, and there's opportunities for agencies to go back up the other way and get into higher value consulting.
Right.
For years we've given it away. And, you know, we've had that strategic thinking, done all that insight, we've done that research, we've done the, you know, all the hard graft that, you know, the Accentures of this world and others, you know, doing day in, day out. They've got a huge amount of credibility in that space. They've been able to actually command a much higher level of hourly rates and premium rates for their services because of the perception of, you know, where they've come from and the industry that they've come from. So for them, you know, it was a natural extension to what they already were doing. And it was about capturing more value and also making those relationships with their clients stickier over time. We should learn from that, and we should be getting ourselves creating those consultancies and driving
and going the other way.
Absolutely, particularly, I mean, you have brand agencies. I think they undervalue the services they create. And I think a lot of brand agencies, the insights and the value they create and the development of their brands, their brand propositions, their identities, etc., you know, they don't value that. You know, they sell it on an hourly rate. They don't sell it on the value they create. So I think how we sell our services also needs to evolve too. So, you know, I think, you know, whilst it's attractive to be acquired by a big consulting firm, you equally have this issue about culture again. And I witnessed it when I was at SSE, when a large multinational had acquired a very successful credit agency, and they both pitched up to a presentation to us. You know, and it was very clear very quickly which were the consulting teams and which had come from the agency, not just by their attire. It was just chalk and cheese. It really was. So, you know, but that, you know, that will evolve over time. You know, that will change because, you know, at the moment you've got these two opposing forces coming together for the common requirement of the client to help and service the client. And over time, I think we'll just see a natural merger between those two sorts of skills.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's nice to. I think it's reassuring. I mean, you know, obviously, some people, you know, might sort of say that you know, the professional services companies, you know, they don't have the ability to work at the kind of granular level that a lot of the SMEs and sort of in the world of marketing operate as well. So, I think there is an opportunity to kind of copper bottom and ring fence the industry.
Well, transformation is the other bigger. You know, big one. You know, yeah. any digital transformation project at the moment, you know, the big multinational, both the consultants as well as the, you know, the software providers, and they're all, you know, they're fantastic at what they do. But the issue they find very often is their inability to be able to actually execute that and actually bring that value into the, you know, the value proposition on the front end is significant, but the delivery is always a problem. It's quite interesting, the value chain and the proportion of fees and where it sits in that value chain is very much geared front end. And actually, you know, the further you go down, you know, the margins at the sort of the implementers at the other end are getting far smaller. So again, I think, you know, we as an industry need to actually value what we do and get better at charging accordingly.
Right.
and bring back those margins back into the business in order that we can then attract and retain the talent we want. And fascinatingly, what's happening at the moment is we've seen a massive upturn in demand for agency services, particularly independent agencies. They're thriving. They're doing brilliantly at the moment. They're doing brilliantly for two reasons. First of all, clients are woken up to the fact they don't need a multinational agency, has an office in every country around the world. You know, COVID has taught them actually they want the very best people who can work on their business wherever they are, regardless. And as a result of which, indies are very, very busy. And what's happening at the moment is they're actually turning away work. And of course, as soon as you turn away work, demand more money for it, you start to actually charge a premium for what you do, and then reinvest that in your talent. So you know, we are, I think, the immediate future for independent agencies is very strong. They just have to be, you know, they need to be hard enough and ballsy enough to actually turn around to their clients and say, sorry, A, I'm not going to do that. Or B, yes, I'm quite happy to do that, but it's going to cost you
this. It's going to cost you more, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. And clients, I think, respect you for that. You know, at the end of the day, they want a good job. And they want to pay a fair price, but they want a good job.
Getting back onto the sort of focus on Pimento, I mean, you did, I mean, you've said why it was, why you set it up in the first place, but I mean, what's your kind of vision? I mean, where do you see the business being, the Pimento business being in over the next 5 years?
We've grown really rapidly, particularly during the COVID period. And what we are now assessing is actually, do we have the very best agencies in every part of our offer? So we're looking over time, you know, like a professional football club, to continue to upgrade in certain areas.
Pack the bench.
Absolutely improve the bench. it's not going to be a massive amount because we've obviously hired good people in the first place. But you know, we found also that there's some gaps in what we offer, and there's new niches and new requirements coming in all the time. So we are looking in those niches to find the very best practitioners and the best agencies. We are also looking to expand upon our proposition to our members. So, you know, beyond the reasons they primarily join us, which is, first of all, it's lonely being an independent agency. There's real value in collaboration. We're good at what we do, but we need to find other people who are brilliant at what they do too. We want to be able to learn through collaboration and you know, learn how to run a better business, learn how to attract better talent, learn how to attract more clients, which they get. Clearly, they want to be able to refer and receive referrals from both agencies and Pimento. But they also want to have some fun. So we have a very strong social and networking
side. I was going to say, you're very good on the outbound kind of bonding thing with emails and meetings and stuff like that. I mean, it's one thing that I have noticed about the Pimento business. It's very good at doing that.
There's a lot of reciprocal support for our members, vice versa. They like that. They also like networking. They're very keen to get back out there. So we're now moving to a combination of virtual and hybrid events. So we're going back into people's offices with our 6 p.m. clubs where we get anything. In the past, we had up to 100 people come to those. I suspect it's probably going to be 30, 40 people in the actual venue. We'll broadcast it simultaneously so that other people can join us. We're running a conference in September, which is the UK Independent Agencies Conference. It's the first time we've done this, and we're doing it with Agencynomics and the Alliance of Independent Agencies. It's truly representative of the category. I think between the three organisations, you know, we work with about 2,000 agencies. So looking forward to that. You know, we're about to launch, you know, unsurprisingly, we've got lots of people who have, you know, interests outside of work. So we thought, well, actually, if we can make work and your hobbies part of work, we can have some fun together. And the more fun that we can have together, the deeper the relationship. So we have a successful burgeoning Pimento Golf Society. We have a new wine club we're just launching. We have a classic car club. We have a great number of people into horse racing, so we're going there. And all these things are opportunities to get our members together, but equally to get our clients involved. So that's fun. We also came up with a thing called networking during lockdown. we decided that it would be fun if you can't, you know, have more than six people in a pub at any one time, then actually has six people in a walk and end up in a pub. So we did a lot of that.
Fantastic. That sounds like my kind of exercise.
That's good. And actually, we're also going to have Pimento in the park. So we're going to do an event in Regent's Park in the summer and get our agencies to bring on a picnic, play some softball, have some fun. So
nice.
You know, bring the fun back into agency land. You know, particularly actually if more agencies are going to be working in this hybrid environment, you know, they're not going to have so much connectivity with their teams beyond Zoom and days they're expected to come in. So if we can also, you know, shoulder some of that for them and create opportunities for people all to get together, and that has to be a good thing for one and all.
That's fantastic. Well, I mean, I only scratched the surface of all the businesses you're obviously involved in here as well. So I think it's commendable the strength of the offering that you've got there. So fantastic. And obviously we'll put all the links to all those different businesses in the show notes. But I mean, I can't let you go because this is obviously a new business show. And I mean, without asking a new business question, I mean, if agencies come to you and, you know, with that magic new business question, I mean, what do you think, what is the essence of winning new business as far as you, how do agencies win new business? What's your recommendation?
Listening. We don't do enough of it. And I think what clients want is they want good listeners, they want empathy, they want people who actually take what they listen, go away, come back with a considered response. They want people who will research the market, understand their businesses, and ultimately be a partner with them and be an extension of their own marketing department. So they're looking for deep relationships based not just on the service that you offer, you ought to have an understanding of the impact that you have on that business. So they're looking for business partners. And one of the difficulties we as an industry face is that, particularly with so many different specialisms, that will have a strong understanding of a certain aspect of their business because we do the CRO or we do the UX or the UI or whatever it happens to be. But you need to understand that in the context of everything else in order that actually that can be successful. So I think it's important that actually, again, as part of the training and development of talent, that we teach them to be T-shaped. And actually, whilst you can be a specialist in this area here, you need to have a broad understanding of how all the other channels come together and how marketing has an impact on delivering against their business objectives. And some of that is experience, but some of it is just thirst for knowledge. But you know, the very best agencies, the ones that have a handle on their client's business and are able to articulate or have a point of view, whether they get a call from that client at 5 o'clock in the morning or 11 o'clock at night. And that insight and that point of view engenders relationships that go way beyond working relationships. And if you work like that and you support people like that, you'll find you'll have clients that will basically stick with you for 20, 30 years. And they will follow you around job to job because you built that trust. So for me, it's listening. Always start with listening. And don't be afraid to ask, you know, straightforward but difficult questions sometimes. And it'd be spontaneous. You know, it's like any relationship. You know, you need to, if it's a marriage or a friendship, you need to basically think about ways in which you can actually create that magic and keep that relationship bubbling and so on.
Keep it spicy.
Yeah, it is. You know, keep the spice in there. Absolutely.
Pimento spice.
Absolutely.
Well, I tell you what, Stephen. I mean, it was a great run around the block, and I mean, you've covered some fantastic stuff there. But obviously, loads going on, and you mentioned horse racing, and funnily enough, actually, I usually use the phrase, but as we head towards the final furlong. This is basically a chance for you to tell us what's coming up. And I noticed a beautiful post from you today, and I have to point out and give you props for it, about being grateful for the things that you're sort of working on, which also included a lovely plug for yours truly here. But I noticed that, obviously, I mentioned at the start with you're involved with Ebico. Is it Ebico? Is that how you pronounce it? Ebico?
Yeah.
Which, I mean, and that's all about low carbon home warmth and stuff, which is obviously a hot button right now in, you know, sort of in debate around the country. And so my unplanned question for you was that, I mean, quickly, what's your kind of take on the energy debate that's raging at the moment? I mean, do you think we should be striving for more kind of energy independence?
Absolutely. As a nation, and we've under-invested woefully in infrastructure for decades. We've become dependent upon our energy resources from all sorts of places, particularly from the east at the moment. That's going to have a massive impact, as we've seen already, both on prices, but also on the availability of energy.
Right.
We have to invest in renewables. We have to make sure that we find ways in which we can reduce our carbon footprint. Half the problem in this country is that the housing stock, including the place I'm sitting in at the moment, is so poorly insulated that it doesn't matter how much energy you pump in if the windows are open all the time. So we've got to produce, got to look at that and find ways to insulate better. We've got to basically find ways to create sustainable renewable energy over time, but find the ways to be able to actually capture wind in particular. And, you know, we're playing that today. And can you imagine the wind farm, they'll be having it away today. I suspect most of them had to basically turn their turbines off.
It's like, everybody turn your electric on, we need to run it out.
But, yeah, the truth is, you know, wind alone is not going to resolve it. So we need innovation. So what the Ebico Trust are doing is we had a very successful brand, which was a brand called Ebico, been in the market 15, 20 years, 100,000 customers. We had a very strong and differentiated proposition. Essentially, our proposition was to make money on energy and use the monies we made on energy to help the fuel poor. The issue for us was that we put about £2 million into helping insulate people's homes and running projects across the country. And the thing that we learned very quickly is that we could actually have a much greater impact if we used the money we actually generated, no pun intended, to actually invest in new technologies which would actually have a larger impact on reducing carbon footprint. So we've invested in lots of startups. We have a grant scheme. We work with universities, colleges, and professionals and academics. And we also lobby on behalf of the renewable category to actually try and get more people to basically recognise that we can't go on the way we are. So it's a whole stack of different things, but ultimately it's about basically galvanising change, coming up with creative solutions and innovations to help basically reduce carbon footprint.
Fantastic.
Everybody has a responsibility to do this. I mean, I've got three lights on there, for God's sake. But in truth, you know, we've got to be just recognise that it's a precious commodity.
Okay, so good stuff. Well, that kind of wraps it up slightly. I mean, have you got any other big announcements coming up? I mean, I think you've made a load, but I mean, are there any more coming up for your businesses in the short term?
We're always dreaming up new ideas, and also as involved in a startup in the travel industry.
Yes,
based first subscription brand in travel. The proposition is very simple. People pay either an annual or a monthly subscription fee, get access to over 900,000 hotels worldwide.
Wow.
And beyond that, obviously, villas, apartments, cruises, etc. But real strong focus on hotels. And we basically market those hotels at the same price or less that the travel agents pay. So, in essence, we've stripped out all the commissions. And we don't make a single penny out of travel. We only make money out of subscription. So we're typically anywhere up to 40% cheaper than the biggies like Expedia and Booking.com.
Wow, you're not afraid to take on the big boys, are you?
I love challenger brands. You know, we've got a widget we're about to launch on our platform, which again is a first. That'll actually, as soon as you basically lock onto a hotel and decide which room you want, it'll actually show you the Ultimate Travel Club price. And it automatically will display what you would expect to pay on either Booking.com or Expedia.
Wow, so compare and save, yeah.
It is, yeah, without you having to go off onto another site and trust. So
nice.
That's the concept. We're going to have open access so people can basically come in and look for themselves, and hopefully we'll get as many people away both to domestic and international holidays this summer.
Fantastic. Well, good luck with that, and maybe we can avail ourselves of that service as well at some point soon. So fantastic. Well, best of luck with that. Now, the final three questions, which are the bit that everybody waits for anyway, which is the time to relax now. The show and tell. Did you manage to bring an object with you that has some significance? And I know this is a podcast, so you might have to explain what it is anyway for the.
Okay, I'll basically put it up.
There he is.
He's a little character. He's a little character called Mickey Mouse.
And, fantastic.
The reason why I put Mickey Mouse on, and he sits in my office with Minnie over there, is that not only was I fortunate enough to go work for the Walt Disney Company for 5 years, but I grew up with Disney, like so many of us. The thing about this little character is he's the little guy who's not prepared to take anyone on. He's always basically got a point of view. He does talk an awful lot, but he, again, is endearing, lovable, and somebody I think is just there to try and help other people. So I've always liked Mickey.
And some of those qualities are instilled in your good self as well.
The big ears, yeah, in particular, and the large nose.
I was talking about the personality and not being afraid.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah.
Excellent. All right, good stuff. Well, thank you very much for that. Excellent. So we got a Hollywood star on there. That's as an object. That's fantastic. Now, the song. Tell me about the song that you've recommended.
Well, it's less of a song. It's more of an anthem. John Miles' Music. This is kind of your Desert Island Disc. I mean, not only is it, I think, something ridiculous, like 8 or 9 minutes
long. It's an epic track.
It is an epic track, but I've always loved it because it is like going to the opera. There's so much in it, and it's he wasn't a one-hit wonder. Everyone says, "Oh, he ever had one hit." He actually had two or three hits.
Are you a John Miles fan?
I went to go and see him in concert when I was about, I don't know, probably about 14 years old or something ridiculous.
Because you know he did. Oh no, he's recently passed. But I mean, he did the Night at the Proms as well. That was his big thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and he was a showman too. And,
yes.
For me, both the lyrics and the ambition behind the track are vast, and that's why I like it.
That's fantastic. I tell you what, I have to thank you for it because you've made me connect. I've connected the dots. I never realised his relationship between, you know, obviously, or the relationship between John Miles and the Alan Parsons Project as well. So, I mean, are you a fan of that as well, the Alan Parsons Project?
I am. Yeah. As it happens. Yeah.
A bit of mind in the sky.
We are showing our age, Keith.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, the thing I was going to say, I gave it a listen, and obviously we'll play it as your walk off music today. But I gave it a listen again, and I got to say, with all the technology we have today, you know, with you know, that can make people sound so good, he didn't have that, and yet he had such a range. He was such a fantastic vocalist. He could really sing, couldn't he?
He could. And you know, there's other people out there. You know, Queen would be another example.
Sure.
In terms of that kind of operatic ability to be able to actually, and Bowie was another one. You know.
Well, now you're talking.
These are legends.
Now we are showing our age. All right. Well, listen, and I did ask you to bring a book, but you said you don't read a book. You don't read books.
I honestly don't read a book, partly because I don't have the time.
Right.
Partly because I spend an awful lot of time consuming content on multiple platforms.
Right.
I'd spend all day long in front of a screen reading. So I try.
Like the man who fell to earth with all the TV screens in front of him.
Exactly. And I'm hopeless. I'll go on holiday and my wife will read 3 or 4 books in a week or whatever. And I'll sit there, and I'm shamed by this, but I'll sit there basically and try and do nothing for a bit. But I'm a fidgeter, so I'm not very good at sitting in the sun either. So I'll get up, or what I did a few years ago is I invested in a pair of prescription sunglasses, so I can actually sit out there with and still basically be working, but doing it very subtly. That's my reading, I'm afraid. I read what other people have to say. Or more importantly, I listen.
Fantastic. Well, that's the most important. That comes back to what you said earlier as well. So yeah, that's good. But okay. Well, that's it. You've done it. Thank you very much, Stephen. I really appreciate the time you took to do that. And I mean, you know, this has been, you know, quite educational for me, obviously, but I hope for everybody else out there, you know, a great time to hear somebody who's sort of well established in the advertising marketing industry, sort of talking about the foundations and looking forward and stuff. So, you know, and I hope obviously it does inspire people to start networking a bit more seriously. If people want to get hold of you, Stephen, what's the easiest way?
Just drop me a line. My email address is Stephen with a PH, dot Knight with a K. at Pimento, as in the hot red chili pepper, pimento.co.uk.
Fantastic. Well, I mean, there's plenty of ways that the agencies can collaborate now. And for sure, absolutely, as we've said, there's plenty of clients out there looking for innovation sort of solutions and stuff. So I sincerely hope that Pimento continues to do great things in the creative agency space. But for now, thanks very much, Stephen. Take care, and I'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Stephen, for a great chat. Remember, folks, these days it pays to collaborate and network in this age of experimentation and new ways of working. Pimento's got thousands of happy agency members and they all get to network and trade tips and projects. It's a great place for new business development. Well, that wraps it up for this week, and what a week it's been. My thanks to Team Fuel, Matt, Donna, Peter, and you, our wonderful listeners. Thank you all very much for helping us grow. Fuel is a proud member of the Marketing Podcast Network, and if you like this show, then check out all the others at marketingpodcasts.net or look in the show notes at www.thefuelpodcast.com. Ta-da for now. We'll be back next week on Fuel, the podcast for the new business curious. And really, shouldn't that include you? I'm a Smith called Keith, and you're listening to Fuel, where sales and marketing never sounded so good. Visit thefuelpodcast.com for all our shows.